Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, welcome back to the second hour, folks, of a very busy night. Kicking off Confederate History Month is Eddie the Bombardier Miller's birthday. Our beloved co-host turned 66, or he is 66 as of today. We're going to be talking to him about that and the life he's led and lived. A little bit later this hour, new website, new production for our on-air broadcast, the live shows, all coming up here at the top of the next month that we're putting the finishing touches on these renovations. And so a lot of stuff to be thankful for and look forward to as we cap off a successful fundraising month. You know, we try to leave you alone for most of the year, but during those 4 months that we're doing the quarterly fundraising drives, we have to have you to keep this show on the air and funded and moving forward. And so we're going to be celebrating the spoils of that, such as they are, here with some updates. And anyway, it's all good news. Another big thing happening right now, Keith, the American Renaissance Conference. And, you know, at first, when we first had Jared Taylor on to talk about the conference and promote it back in January, February, we were fully intending to be there, and I received some emails and phone calls from folks who were looking forward to meeting us, and I'm sorry to have let them down. In fact, it was a last-minute decision. It just didn't make sense for us in terms of a production schedule. With me not speaking there this year, the way it was set up, it just didn't work out. Their keynote speaker and their dinner banquet kicks off right at the same time that we go on the air. So tonight it would have been a conflict of their dinner banquet and their major speaker versus our show. We could have had the show out there, done a live show, but it would have pulled people away from the main conference. And this is Jared's events. This is the Amren Showcase. So all eyes should be on them. And so we didn't want to conflict with that. So we just we stayed here at the studio, and we look forward to participating with them in the future and all that. But I wanted to make a quick statement about that before we moved on, because I know a lot of people have been asking, are we there? Are we going to be there? Why are we not there? And that's the story. It just didn't work out in terms of timing and schedule. Keith?
But nonetheless, Amren and Jared have our wholehearted support. Believe me, they do invaluable work. And everybody who wants real, true knowledge, wants to have light shown in the dark crevices of the national life that the mainstream doesn't want you looking into, you need to check out the Amren website. They have great articles. In fact, they're one of our permanent links on our blog roll. Now, let's get into James and I met earlier this week. I showed James this article from the Sunday Commercial Appeal, Sunday, March 31st, 2013 Commercial Appeal, last week's Sunday paper here in Memphis. And he was flabbergasted, and I think you will be too. I'm don't know what where on the Richter scale of liberal insanity this would register, but it would have to be, you know, like the New Madrid earthquake. this is what is happening here in Memphis now. Things get zanier and crazier. I'm expecting to see white people leaping off of the top of skyscrapers hand in hand, you know, just crowds of them doing it, you know, like lemmings. But here's the article. The spirit moves them. It's easier to love your neighbor if they are actually your neighbors. And here's what it says. Young Christian suburbanites put their faith in Orange Mound, and has a picture of this young blonde sitting fetchingly on a couch being toted into a shotgun shack in Orange Mound, one of the old black urban ghettos of Memphis, because they're moving in. Holy Saturday was a fitting day for Jason Payne to help three of his friends move into a five-room cottage, as they call, we used to call them a shotgun shack, on Hilton Street that includes his handwritten sign in the front window, "We love because he first loved us," John 4:19. "It's our welcome mat," says Payne, a 30-year-old former stock analyst, Collierville High graduate. Collierville is a white suburb of Memphis. and a Central Church member who, along with nine of his young, single, suburban friends, six men, four women, are moving into Orange Mound, one of America's most historically and culturally significant African-American neighborhoods. It's also one of the city's most blighted, impoverished, and distressed neighborhoods. Boy, I wonder if there's a connection there, James. Payne's 1940s era house, which he bought at auction last fall for $12,000, is on a street with half a dozen board ups. Plywood sells very well in Memphis, by the way. At least one burnout and several houses that look as if they could collapse at any moment. According to a recent University of Memphis study, 45% of the properties in Orange Mound are in disrepair, the highest rate in the city. Payne says they've spent more than $30,000 renovating the house, which was vacant and gutted after thieves tore the place up and stole everything that could be removed, including the kitchen sink. Although Payne is now chief financial officer for a local real estate startup, he says he and his friends are moving into Orange Mound to make a spiritual investment, not a financial one. "We're not going to save anyone," said Payne. "We're going to serve our neighbors and together with our neighbors to glorify God and make Jesus proud. It's easier to love your neighbors if they are actually your neighbors." For Payne and his friends who met at church or in ministries such as Orange Mound Outreach Ministries, this isn't a social experiment. It's a theological imperative. They are part of a growing number of missional communities, quote unquote, across the city and around the country, small groups of Christians who move into distressed neighborhoods to be good neighbors, not do-gooders. Sure. The largest local missional community seems to be in Binghamton, a distressed neighborhood, another black neighborhood, by the way, now served by residents connected with the Church of Christ, the United Methodist Church, Service Over Self Ministries, Elton Ministries, Caritas Village, and Christ Community Health Services, among others. "Missional is a posture. It's a way of life," said Brandon Harmaker, a missional church leader from Texas who spoke Thursday at Faith Baptist Church in Bartlett. There's your group, James. You know, the Southern Baptists are right in the vanguard here. "It requires being present and making true friendships. Missional doesn't get in a hurry." Payne and most of his friends are members of Central Church in Collierville, a non-denominational megachurch with a history of supporting inner-city missions and ministries and racial reconciliation. Remember that buzzword. But running a food pantry, volunteering at an after-school program, or taking a bus trip to Promise Keepers isn't the same as moving into a neighborhood most people try to avoid, especially at night. We'll be back after these comments from our sponsors.
There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Are you looking for an affordable way to earn your bachelor's degree? Do you want a college experience that's more personal? Then discover your future at America's Transfer College. Students across the U.S. are choosing Ivy Bridge College as a better, smarter way to earn their degree. Thanks to Ivy Bridge's unique program, starting at a two-year college and transferring to finish your degree has never been easier. The program is simple. Start with Ivy Bridge College and take your first 2 years of college online. Transfer to one of over 140 of Ivy Bridge's partner schools and take your upper division courses. Then graduate with your bachelor's degree from the school of your choice. Personal attention, small class sizes, affordable tuition, and a clear pathway to graduation. Start your academic journey and contact us to learn more about Ivy Bridge College today. Call 877-622-2059 or visit americastransfercollege.com to find out more.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
When the truth is found, welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, let's recap. Eddie the Bombardier Miller, the birthday boy himself, 66 years young, just walked into the studio. We're going to be talking to him in the next segment. But we're going to finish up this story here that Keith has brought to us from the local newspaper. And basically what's going on is these young white Christians, they say they're Christians, they're certainly liberal Christians, even though they're fundamentalists, they're very liberal. And basically they feel as though the only way to do a good deed is if the good deed, the recipient of that deed is a ghetto black person. And so here's the thing. You know, we were talking about members of Bellevue Baptist Church going out, and when they do Bellevue Loves Memphis outreach, it's where they clean up areas of town. The areas of town they go to work in are exclusively and without exception black areas, as if, you know, it doesn't count as a good deed unless the recipient, again, is a black person. And I think these people have the mentality, too, that you can't get into heaven unless you put your life on the line and proving you're not a racist. We see these Bellevue families, these middle-class suburban families, taking their young kids out to these very dangerous, violent, crime-ridden gang neighborhoods and going out there and doing work, picking up trash, you know, where the murder rate is just, insane, the homicide rate. It's bad enough that they go out there for an afternoon and put their kids in such a situation, but now you've got people, Keith, that are choosing to go and live in the most dangerous and violent neighborhood of Memphis just to prove that they're not racist. Now, I don't see anywhere in the Bible where in order to be a good Christian, you have to do reckless and dangerous acts. It's okay if you choose to do good things and be benevolent to anyone and everyone, and certainly we are too. Eddie, as a nurse for many years, has treated people of all races and creeds, and you know, we're all about that. We're certainly we want to take care of our family first, but yeah, everybody should be treated right. But this is absurd. This is a sick thinking. Sam, we were talking to Sam in the break. He called it naive, and that's putting it kindly.
Look. Let me say this. If having a sense of racial solidarity is unchristian, if liking to be with your own kind, if birds of a feather flocking together is unchristian, then all of these Christian liberals need to have a long, long talk with their black brethren in the clergy, because they all insist on racial solidarity. In fact, racial solidarity is the be-all and end-all of the black church. On the other hand, the white church is all about white dispossession, white destruction, and white death. In fact, move into the ghetto, the most violent, the most impoverished ghetto in Memphis, and see if you survive. That seems to be the acid test of whether you're a Christian. What these people don't seem to understand is that their attitude is the ultimate expression of a perverted sense of white supremacy. They're saying, we're so much better than you that you are going to reap untold benefits just by me moving into your neighborhood and having my bright, beaming white face walking around where you are. That apparently this is going to totally transform not only your neighborhood, but you. All of a sudden, the thugs will stop committing crimes, the prostitutes will stop turning tricks, everybody will go out and become a gardener and paint up their house and plant roses, and everything's going to, it's going to be Mr. Neighbors, Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, and you're suddenly going to turn the worst ghetto in Memphis into Lake Wobegon, where all the children are above average.
Also, at the very end of that article, Keith, these kids, these 20-something-year-olds that moved into this drug-filled, crime-ridden neighborhood, said that they didn't tell their parents about it because their parents wouldn't have wanted them to go there. Well, yeah, any decent parent who loves their kids don't want them to get shot, murdered, raped, or whatever's going to happen to these people, inevitably so. But you can buy a house in that neighborhood for about $5,000 or $6,000. To buy a house in this neighborhood is cheaper than a pretty bad used car. But here's the thing, Keith, and I got to say this. I was at Bellevue one time, and I think I've shared this story, and there was a young black girl near my wife's age, sitting close to us, and you know how it is in Baptist churches, they have a little greeting at the beginning of the sermon. You go and you hug and shake everybody's hand, and so my wife, we passed, you know, she said hello to this other young black girl and asked her, you know, if she... what she thought of the church, and she said, you know, do y'all have any black people here? And that's what she said. I mean, I'm not making that up. And she didn't like it because there weren't enough blacks. And so, you know, how do you beat that? You know, they don't want to go to a church. They don't want to go to white churches. And living, you know, inviting them to church ain't going to change that. Living in their neighborhoods isn't going to make them like you. And here's the thing about it. You're darned if you do, darned if you don't. You move, whites moving out of areas that are beginning to turn, demographically speaking and racially speaking, are guilty of white flight, which is racism. But guess what these people are guilty of? And I wrote this in my book, in Racism Schmacism. These white do-gooders who are moving into the ghetto to prove that they're not racist, they are also racist because they're guilty of the sin of gentrification, and that's what's going on there. So, you know, they didn't absolve themselves of anything, they didn't save themselves anything, and they put themselves, I really fear for their safety.
Well, let me say this. If you want the real acid test of where things are, I look back at my own personal history. I started going to public school during the segregation era. Then later on, luckily, I got out just before there was an era called busing, in which all the public schools cratered and Memphis public schools became the worst in the state of Tennessee because we had the highest percentage of blacks of any major city in Tennessee. But in between, there was a little interlude called freedom of choice, in which any person that wanted to transfer to a school in which they were a racial minority, in other words, whites could go to a black school, blacks could go to a white school, they were given carte blanche. They would run a taxi cab out to their home every day and take them to school and have a taxi cab pick them up and take them back to their home. It was going to be painless. It was going to be free. It was going to be facilitated, and the school board was 100% behind it. And guess what? Very few black people wanted to go to white schools. We had maybe about 30 in my entire high school, and they were minor celebrities. Some of them were in bands, some of them were athletes and whatnot, and everybody thought that was great. There were a few people, poor children of benighted white liberals, that had sent their kids to the black schools, and that seemed to go along pretty well, too. But that didn't satisfy our social engineers at the top, our elites that want basically not to help black people up, but to help white people down, to bring us to a to basically turn America into a third world country. They believed, like Rousseau famously said, that sometimes people need to be forced to be free. That's exactly what they did. That's what they're trying to do here. They're apparently putting guilt trips. That the psychological conditioning, James, has apparently progressed to such a point that now they have brainwashed people into taking actions like this. Now, their parents didn't know about it. Again, we've got an upside-down world where the children are supposedly smarter than their parents. They don't. Age doesn't get any respect. The wisdom of your ancestors isn't even a matter to be considered. The fact that you're, you know, everything new is better, and progressives are the smart people, and consequently, that's why we can tear down Nathan Bedford Forest Park in Memphis, or Confederate Park, or Jefferson Davis Park, because our ancestors were all stupid and evil. That's, if you believe that, then see me after the show. There's a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you. If you are that stupid to think that your ancestors were worse than you are and less Christian than you are, you really need some psychological treatment.
All right, folks, we're going to have a birthday party when we come back. Keith Alexander, there he goes. Keith Alexander the Great. Bombardier Eddie Miller coming up. Stay tuned.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, The Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Hi-ya!
get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, we're getting down into celebration time here, the last half of the show tonight, last hour and a half. Confederate History Month, it kicks off tonight, Pappy, and we're excited about that. It's always a highlight of our broadcast year every April, and Winston Smith is going to be on with me for tonight's third hour. During this month, each of the co-hosts, Eddie the Bombardier Miller, Keith Alexander, Winston tonight, and of course myself, we're going to be a part of the third hour talking about all things Southern. We're going to have invited guests and talk about different things about the history and culture of the South that perhaps you didn't know before. But before we get into that celebration, another celebration is going on right now. It is the birthday of the man himself, longtime political cesspool co-host, Eddie the Bombardier Miller. And as we always talk about, we have a very close-knit fraternity here at TPC. Those of us who work on the radio show came to be friends naturally, and over the years we have developed a very familial bond, not just with ourselves, but certainly with our listeners as well. We genuinely enjoy each other's company. Like brothers, we eat together at least once a week in order to prepare for the forthcoming Saturday night program and mark the birthdays, anniversaries, and other special occasions that occur during the year. And again, that being said, I want to wish a very happy birthday to you, Eddie. You've been with us since 2006 as an active co-host, and despite being a little longer in the tooth than yours truly, you play a vital role on this team, and you know you do. And 66 years old. You know, back when you were growing up, you didn't leave a fight until you killed a brontosaurus. So you obviously got a few of them under your belt. But here's a little more background, everybody, on what I believe to be our most colorful character. Eddie, you were born in Clark County, Kentucky on April 6, 1947, and like most of us here on the staff, you have ancestors who fought for the Confederacy, of whom you're very proud. You moved to Tennessee in 1952 when you were just a five-year-old young pup, and you earned your master's degree in race relations from the mean streets of South Memphis. As an adult, you followed in the footsteps of your Confederate forebears by serving honorably in the Army. In 1969, you spent 2 years as an active duty combat medic and 4 years as a specialist. So that's a little bit of background on you, Eddie, and I'm glad you're here, buddy. I love you, and happy birthday. I'm glad, you know, when I knew your birthday was falling on a show night, I said we have to put it together. And you're here dressed to the nines. It looks like you're going to go party after this, so I'm glad we had you for a few minutes. But I want the audience, you know, we're having you on to talk about your birthday because I like for the audience to know us, and we try to talk to the audience about our lives, who we are behind the scenes, and I want them, even though you've been with us now for 7 years, we always have new listeners coming on. I want to talk a little bit about the man you are and how you got to be that way. I know you had, if you don't mind me bringing it up, a rough childhood, and it was a hard childhood.
By nowadays standards, it was mighty rough. Initially, it wasn't too bad. It started getting bad probably around 1958 when I was about 11 years old. I lived over in what became the mean streets of South Memphis. At the time, when we first moved in there, I was about 10 or 11 years old. It wasn't too bad. As James Wells knows, and I'm not crying or, you know, letting tears fall in my suit, but my mother left when I was in the second grade. James knows about that. I came home from school one day and all the furniture was gone. Even though I was pretty dumb at the second grade, I knew something was wrong. Well, my dad worked as a construction worker. He had his own construction company, James. I've told you and Keith that. And he was on the road a lot, so I pretty well raised myself. And we had some wild and woolly times there. And about that time, from about 1958 to 59, when I was 11, 12 years old, there was a mass exodus of the whites left out of that part of town, and I was stuck there with probably turned into about 98% black. And I just have no words to tell you people the horror story it was. You know, just getting to school and back each day in one piece without getting killed or beat up severely was a major accomplishment. I've had grown blacks, James, to turn dogs loose on me. We took a different route home from school every day. Sometimes you could get by with coming the same route 2 days in a row, but it never more than 2 days in a row because the blacks would lay for you. Here I'm 11, 12 years old, and I had, you know, 16, 18, 20-year-olds laying for me in gangs, throwing bricks. We called them brick bats in those days. Like I say, clubs, anything they could get. Well, I survived that, and I learned the reality of what, you know, the race relations are. And when I got drafted, like you say, like James told you, in 1969, and Fort Polk was great. It took basic training because nobody gave those drill sergeants any crap. All those guys were back in Vietnam. There was always five or six of them, and they would beat you to death. I saw several guys give them crap. You never saw them again. It was one of some of the worst beatings I ever seen, besides the cops in South Memphis when I was a kid, was at Fort Polk. But when I got to Fort Sam, it was a totally different story. The blacks pretty well, they even though they were a minority, they would stick together where the whites wouldn't. They caused a lot of trouble there. They got a big fight down there trying to save a little 16-year-old. Like you say, I got out of there, went on the nine for, almost a whole year. It came home. I had to do standby reserve. Back in those days, when you got drafted, you had to do a six-year obligation. But, yeah, James, it's been a wild ride. James always likes me to tell about the time of going back to when I was about 11 years old, me and some buddies of mine, we went over to a place called DeSoto Park here in Memphis. It's so named DeSoto because Hernando DeSoto, when he came through the Mississippi River through Tennessee, through Memphis, they named DeSoto Park after him. And there's a big Indian man over there where the Indians used to have their tribal meetings, all the various tribes of the Chickasaws, the Mississippis, and the Choctaws, and what have you. They would meet there. Well, another 11-year-old boy, we stopped there in the park, waited till it got dark. We slipped off to the Memphis-Arkansas Bridge, which wasn't a very long hike at all. We hopped a freight train and rode up into we were going to Alaska. I'll never forget that, James. We had $47.50 with me and a 16-gauge shotgun wrapped up in a burlap bag. And we had a ball. We were gone 10 days when we got caught. And town marshal called us, and he was miraculously able to reach my dad, who happened to be in town at that time. And my dad and my friend's dad came up into Missouri to get us. We had to sleep in the jail. The guy didn't know what else to do with us. The town marshal, town sheriff, whatever he was, his wife wouldn't let us in the house because we looked so bad. We had boils all over us from drinking bad water and tick bites. And we didn't know we were living in misery. We thought it was fun. But I will never forget that. And I can truthfully say, I think every kid, every boy before he reaches 17 years old should hop a freight train and stay gone for a week. To this very day, I believe that was probably the most exciting thing that ever happened to me in my life, riding that freight train and kind of hoboing it for 10 days till I got caught. Fast forwarding to now, Jan, we talked about this on the radio. I've gotten into this thing of running, and I've been running for St. Jude. Matter of fact, James, a lot of people might not know this. I seem like I have too many things going on right now that I can't really concentrate on one area. I guess I'm a jack of all trades and master of none because I've got so many things going on. 21 days from today, people, I'll be in Nashville, Tennessee. I'll be running the St. Jude Country Music Marathon. And we're trying to raise money for St. Jude. That's a big part of it. In fact, that's the major part of the running. But I will have to confess, I do love the running. Now, there's a few of them I haven't loved. It'll be 2 weeks ago today. 2 weeks ago, yeah, 2 weeks ago today. I was telling James and Keith how I got caught down on the Mississippi River on my 22-mile run. And I got soaked to the bone. It was about probably 34 to 36 degrees. It got caught in the rain down there. I underestimated the cold. The sun started dropping faster than I thought it would. And I left my goo. If any of you runners out there, run very, very far, you know what I'm talking about. We'll talk about goo. It's a little, it comes in like little semi-tubular packages that you squeeze it out. It's 100 calories of a scientifically designed nutritional mixture that you're supposed to take about every 45 minutes to an hour. Naturally, with my forgetful mind, I left them in the truck. And I got a little hypothermia and probably a little bit of hypoglycemia because I started getting the shakes and stuff. And I was still about 6 or 7 miles from the truck. But I made it back. But that's what I'm into right now. And I've got to come full circle where I came from being a pagan, I never really believed in anything as far as God or Christ. I thought maybe it was possible. I had a miraculous conversion to Christianity February the 8th of 2009. And I'm still developing as we all, James will be the first to admit, we never really get there in our Christianity. And even though this is a hardcore political show, and I wholeheartedly adhere to our philosophy here in the political cesspool. Matter of fact, if you were to ask James and ask who the most hardcore cesspoolian was, he'd probably say the Bombardier.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm really hardcore. I'm a hardcore Christian. I'm going to tell you flat out. People, it looks like we're getting ready to go to a sponsor's break here. So we'll turn you over to James for a second.
Stay tuned, everybody. Amazing man Eddie is, and we're just glossing over 66 years of life here. But, I mean, the stories this man could tell, it's like Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer, you name it. We'll be back.
We'll return. We'll return.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You ought to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
If you want to experience the great outdoors in comfort and style, then you need products from Teton Sports. For any of your camping, hiking, or outdoor needs, Teton Sports has top-of-the-line products for any adventure. Our sturdy and lightweight Wilderness 55 backpack has a built-in rainfly and plenty of compartments and pockets, perfect for hiking the mountains or a weekend camping trip. And our zero-degree sleeping bag features Superloft Elite 4-channel hollow fiber insulation for warmth, as well as right and left side zippers to let you zip 2 Teton bags together. With an adjustable mummy hood and interior storage pockets, our sleeping bags are the best on the market. Teton Sports is all you need for any outdoor adventure. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman Warehouse, or Wholesale Sports. And next time you're preparing for an adventure, think of Teton Sports.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Folks, we're celebrating the life of Eddie the Bombardier Miller, and he earned that name, the Bombardier, not because he was a bombardier in war, he was a combat medic, but because of his intense personality as an activist. And anyway, Eddie, I mean, how do you cover 66 years of life in 2 commercial radio show segments? But just to recap, just the glossing that you did in the last segment. Born in Kentucky, 1947, you moved to Memphis, 5 years old, had a hard upbringing with regards to your parents. At the age of 11, integration and busing kicked in. And when busing kicked in, all of the whites in your neighborhood left. Your family didn't. And you literally were terrorized by blacks in that neighborhood and in that school. And this isn't propaganda, folks. We're not trying to, you know, impress you with the story. It's just the truth. That's what it was. What Eddie experienced in terms of his dance with multiculturalism and diversity is a little bit different than what you see in the movies, but far more close to the truth. And it's not to say that everybody will experience it as bad as Eddie, but you were there. You were 11 years old and sleeping with a shotgun underneath your pillow every night because you feared for your life every day. And you talked to me how sick you would get at the end of a school day, knowing you'd have to walk home. You'd get physically nauseous and then have to go home and face that. Well, that's not the story that they teach you with regards to race relations. It's always whites are the bad guys. Whites are the ones that are making victims of black people. And the truth is something you'll get here. And that's not to say there aren't bad white people. Obviously there are. But this is more the norm. But anyway, fast forwarding past that, Eddie, you survived. And you went into the Army. You have a lot of stories you could tell there. You had a lot of Tom Sawyer-like experiences even before the Army, and you shared one of those stories. You're an avid hunter, and they go up into the wilds of Montana and just get lost hunting for elk and all of these other things. I love listening to your stories. You are truly something out of like a tall tale, the things you have done. And we love hearing them. In Army, you had a long row there. You were in the Army for several years. Your experience in basic training, it was rough with regards, again, to race relations. But in the Army, you served as a medic. You served your country. You honorably discharged. You were in the Army, what, 6 years?
2 years active, 4 years.
2 years active, 4 years inactive. So it was 6 years. And after that, you became a registered nurse, and you see, that was your career after the Army, all the way up until the last few years when you stopped working. You were a registered nurse, helping all of humanity, all the people. And of course, you got into the radio show in 2006. Now you are a runner. You came to know Christ a couple of years ago, and are a runner and raising money for St. Jude and participating in all those marathons now at 66 years of age. I'll tell you a story about how me and you first met, and I know you know it well. I was running for office. I was running for state representative in 2002. This was 2 years before I started the radio show. And I was in a pretty heated race, did pretty good for myself, if I do say so myself, as a 21-year-old man. But I had a campaign headquarters and everything else. I mean, it was a pretty legit campaign. And the campaign headquarters was in a strip mall. And I came there one night after we were going out knocking on doors, and I found a handwritten note from a guy. And it just so happened to be Eddie Miller, who, I'd never met at that time. And Eddie lived within walking distance of my campaign headquarters. And so through that note that he left on the door there, taped on the door, I came to know Eddie, and he started working with me on that campaign. And like everything else, we lost, of course. But we started a lifelong friendship. So you could say I won much more than I had intended to when I started that race. And we got to know each other through that campaign. 2 years later, the radio show starts, and not long after that, you're brought on as a co-host. And we've been working together ever since. The stories we could tell as a result of our times together would fill much more than the time we have left. But that's Bombardier, that's the Cliff's Notes. That's the condensed version. But let me ask you this, Eddie. We've talked about your career, your life, growing up a little bit, what you're doing now, you know, registered nurse all those years. I'm sure you've got stories there. But how did you come to develop your political philosophy as a conservative, as a constitutionalist? Certainly, which was done far before you ever met me, which is why you wanted to work on my campaign. You already had those beliefs.
James, going all the way back, you asked me how I developed my political philosophy. Going all the way back for as long as I can remember, I didn't tell the audience. My grandparents, my maternal grandparents, lived in Arkansas. They were dirt farmers. And I don't mean they did not have a plantation. They were as poor as you could get. But my grandfather was a very, very honorable man. He could get anything he wanted just by his signature. The plantation owners over in eastern Arkansas loved him to death. He was very colorful. I guess I got some of my personality from him, but he was a very staunch Christian. Nowadays, people would call him a staunch segregationist. He loved all people. He loved blacks. Blacks lived around him. They loved him, but they didn't mix. And there's good reasons. I heard you and Keith talking earlier about liberals and stuff. I'll tell you a true story that's happened to me recently in our church. We have our church is like 98% white. And we have a couple of black couples in there. And there's one young man and woman.
And I'm sure you're friendly to them.
That's right. Very friendly. They give me birthday cards. They love me. James, I'll tell you something else, people. I don't know what it is. If there's a black, and this actually happened to me, in Liberty Bowl Memorial Stadium, they will come to me like a moth to a light. They're just attracted to me. And I treat them kind. I'm nice to them. And I really don't have the bitterness anymore. I was very, very bitter toward black people for a while. I had a hatred of me that I cannot describe. I mean, I went through, I tell you what, Vietnam was like a piece of cake compared to what I went through when I was a child amongst these blacks. And I had this virulent hatred for years, but I'm over that. Now what I have is a very healthy respect, just like I would a pack of wolves when you get amongst a group of them. I'm friendly with them. Some of them I actually like. But like I said, my grandfather was very very conservative, and coming on up into South Memphis, I saw what the racists were really like. I saw the true difference between whites and blacks, and I saw the virulent hatred on the black side. And I'll give you one case. We have the black couple in church, and James, ever since day one, there's been complaints. They're always crying. You know, there's racism in this town. This man in church made a racist comment to me, or a woman made a racist comment to my wife. Well, I told him, my best friends, that to me, that is living proof of why integration never works. There's never going to be harmony. Here they are. They're continually complaining, James. The church treats them well. Their children are schooled there. They get a good education at Macon Road Baptist. An education second to none, dollar for dollar. But they're coming up with all these racist stories. And I don't know how in the name of God they complained about racism. And you know, it just never works. The integration never works. And anytime something happens, and listen, I'm 66 years old today. I've seen it happen over and over and over and over. Anytime ever happens, anything happens, anytime, it's always racist. It's never anybody's fault. But whites, it's not something they did that the black people did. It's not because they're not not qualified. It's not something that they did to cause some kind of a hatred. And also, I've noticed too, James, they will misinterpret the slightest little remark that, you know, you can a joke or anything, and they always want to turn it into a racist remark. It will just never ever happen that we can get along with the racists. In harmony. The only way that could happen if both races are bred out, and that would be what a tragedy. I tell you what, if the white race ever disappears from this face of the earth, the lights of civilization will go out. The white race, if you know, our race has developed everything that's worth developing. Lord knows, I'd never invented the fan transistor. I had been in the electricity. Nobody in the cesspool is ever that smart, you know. But our race, the racial stock we're from, they brought the world Christianity. They brought us medicine. They brought us engineering. The Mississippi River Bridge goes across the largest bridge in the largest river in the United States. That was done by white people. I heard one fellow say it, sum it up, and I'm going to turn this over to James. I'll just say this. I've never seen a rocket launched out of the continent of Africa. I've never seen a modern hospital, even heard of a modern hospital built by blacks. I've never heard of a hospital built for whites by blacks. And I'm very proud of my race. I'm very proud of my Christianity. And I'll close with this. I have a little ministry myself downtown. We've talked about this a little bit on the radio. And when somebody comes up to me hungry on the street, and most of them are black, I take them and feed them. And after I feed them, if they'll let me, I testify to them about Jesus Christ. I don't weed them out because they're black, but I don't bring them home and introduce them to my grandson. You know, I am a strict segregationist. I think, matter of fact, I'm working on a project about that right now. James gave me a book to read called The Sixth Commandment, and it's a lot deeper than we thought it was. I found that out. Well, anyway, I'm going to turn this over to James right now. I think he's wanting to tell you something, folks. Hang on.
Well, I forgot what I was going to say, but I enjoyed listening to what you said. Well, you were talking about some of the advancements that came from white people that benefited all of humanity. I mean, you know, what whites created, what they invented, helps all of mankind. But again, it just wasn't enough. The medicine, the benefits and transportation, cell phones, all the things that everybody uses on a daily basis, electricity, cell phones, refrigeration, air conditioning. You know, whites invented it. Everybody gets to use it. But it wasn't enough to absolve us for the sin of slavery. It just wasn't quite enough. But anyway, Eddie, happy birthday, brother. We love you. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for your ministry down there. And thank you for helping everybody. And, you know, it just goes to show what kind of people we really are. But we still have beliefs. But it doesn't matter if you feed blacks, Eddie. You're still a racist. We got to go. Happy birthday, brother. We love you. Winston Smith and I are going to be back. And we're going to kick off Confederate History Month right after this.